everyone, welcome back. It's another episode of Inside Boxing presented by PPV.com on Crown Yahoo Sports. Dan Canobio, Chris Algieri, the champ, and our appendages are all intact. Fireworks show, 4th of July, Joey Chestnut, big time boxing, Cleveland, USA, football, Argentina, football. This is a great time to be alive.
Yes, no doubt about that. Life is life in right now, and it's very enjoyable. So I had a rough night because I got two pit bulls. I think everyone who follows us knows my dogs, but fireworks not good, man. Not good. Makes for a tough night. So I didn't have a great night's sleep last night. I'm a little tired. Did not mess with any fireworks, obviously. Got all my fingers. Did barbecue quite a bit. Had a couple glizzies yesterday. I had a couple hot dogs.
68?
No. So after watching Joey Chestnut do what he does, it's basically a commercial for hot dogs. Like, I finished that. Most people think it's gross. I finished that, and I'm like, I want a hot dog. Time I really have hot dogs is on these kind of American holidays, but especially on 4th of July because of the Nathan's hot dog eating contest, which I love it so much. I think it's a big deal. I won $20.
It's just a slice of Americana.
We bet numbers. How many he was going to get? A buddy of mine down here in South Florida. He likes to throw a little bit of the moolah on events to make it a little nicer. So he bet that he was like he's going to break his record. He's going to go over 80. I'm like, dude, no way. I'm not taking your money like that. I'm like, I say he doesn't get over 70, and he's like, no way. He's definitely getting over 70. So we picked the number. He picked 73. I pick 65. Whoever's closest to the pin wins. So I won.
Yeah, it's like what's it called? Price is Right style.
Yes. Well, no, Price is Right because if you go over, you're done. If it's over, you're done. Whatever. Right. But basically, closest to the pin.
Wrong.
So
wrong
we
show.
whoever was in striking distance got it. Yeah.
So yeah, he's not that guy anymore. In terms of like 80 plus Joey Chestnut, he's more. He's still an unbelievable freak of nature. 100%. 68 is insane, but he's still lapping the opponent.
It was also 100 degrees.
Leaving him in the dust.
Everyone was getting cooked out there. That was like
disgusting.
Yeah, that's
disgusting.
Horrible.
New York right now. It's disgusting. There were big fireworks in Cleveland, Ohio. We will start there. Abdullah Mason stops Albert Bell in the 12th round. Somewhat controversial. We will get to that. A tale of two fights, Chris. First six rounds, I thought, were controlled all by Albert Bell. I seen 6-0 by some respected boxing people. 5-1, 4-2. I was in the 5-1 category. I was like, damn, Bell's length, his awkwardness, the maybe the pressure of fighting at home for Mason, sparring partner, all that stuff came into focus big time. Because first five or six rounds, I'm like, damn, Mason's in some serious trouble. He's going to have to turn this on. And boy, did he ever. Seventh round on, second half of fight, a whole different fight. Mason starts going to the body, starts upping his production in volume. Tenth round comes around. He's hammering Mason. He's hammering Bell to the body. Bell got hit. He says he couldn't breathe through his nose. And then he's getting hit with body shots. The end was near. And the end came in the 12th round with an onslaught right out of the gates, right out of the bell. First bell rings.
Five seconds.
Getting wild. 5 seconds
in
that corner. That was amazing.
Yeah.
That was so great. He goes down, Bell. He gets up. Another onslaught, but no real punches landed. Mark Nelson, the referee, stops the fight without even a punch being landed in that second exchange, without even a count for Albert Bell. He must have saw something that we didn't see. Was Mason going to win that fight regardless? Yes, because all the judges had him way up. We'll get to that too. I believe that there was an early stoppage. It was like kind of delaying the inevitable. I'm upset we had to talk about an early stoppage or that type of stuff because I thought it was an unbelievable performance by Mason in the second half. Gets the win, but it's boxing, so it comes with a whole other sidebars here.
Couple things. One, last show we spoke about how difficult Albert Bell was going to be. And that first six rounds didn't surprise me one bit. Because when I'd heard about their sparring sessions, Albert Bell got the better of it. I had heard, you know, just seeing Albert Bell and the way that he fights, I know he's a very, very difficult guy. He's extremely capable. I knew this was going to be a really, really tough fight. But again, And I'd said this before. Sparring is different. Big gloves and headgear. Make those gloves 8 ounces. You take the headgear off. The power starts to make a big difference. So you can have a guy who's long and can box, and he's going to give you hell no matter what when he's in the gym. But on fight night, when you get popped in your nose, just like Bell did, and he busts his nose, he's bleeding, he's hitting those body shots, it starts to wear on you. 12 rounds is a very long time. Granted, Bell was scheduled to fight Andy Cruz, but Dan, do you know when that fight was supposed to be? How many weeks?
July 18th.
That's 2 weeks away. A guy like Albert Bell, just like Abdullah Mason, I'm sure they stay in shape year-round, they stay in the gym, but 2 weeks matters. And 12-rounders every day matters. So I kind of think that the fall-off in the second half of the fight partly is due to that. You know, he came in on short notice. He was supposed to fight in 2 weeks, so timing everything, making the weights a little different, especially for a tall guy like that. So a lot of factors there, but at the end of the day, Abdullah Mason is the truth. I mean, his ability to make adjustments, his gas tank, and the way that he ratchets up every round. He did that in the Noakes fight, too. He kept ratcheting up to the point where you're like, all right, he's topped out here. He's in full gear. Nope, finds another gear. It's wildly impressive to watch him do that. And his corner was not happy with what was going on. They were pushing him. They were yelling at him. And he was very aware, very mature. And yeah, this kid is not only the truth, he is one of the most exciting fighters in the world. It doesn't matter who he's fighting. Albert Bell makes fights not exciting. Abdullah Mason is can't miss entertainment.
Yeah, one thing we didn't touch on last episode, I apologize to everyone for missing this. Albert Bell had never fought a 12-round fight before.
Yeah, and short notice. I mean,
that's crazy. So when he
got ready to fight the 11th round, Andy Cruz, that's a huge fight. I don't think that was 12 rounds either, but so.
But like you think, like, all right, 33-year-old who's been in the top 10 for quite a while now, he had to have fought at least one 12-er. Never went more than 10 rounds or even less than that. I don't know the official thing there, but it had never been in a 12-round fight. The 11th round was new waters to him, and it showed. Yeah, he did slow down because he's just never been there, and also Mason just took it out of him. That body work from the 7th round on.
Brutal.
It was staggering. Yeah, and you're right to talk about the gas tank. Like he looked like he was barely even breaking a sweat in there during the second half of that fight. Love what I saw from his corner. He just got the full package, Mason. He has the it factor. When he walked out into that ring, he just looks it, number one. He obviously can fight his ass off, and he can step on the gas pedal, and it was a pretty putrid card leading up to that. You know, Shushu Carrington did not perform. Tiger Johnson did not excite the crowd. Scooter Davis did disappoint. So he needed something here. It was great theater. The first 6 rounds going to the challenger. And then, oh my God, this young prodigy has to step on the gas pedal. And he does in front of 10,000 fans at home. Everything that comes along with that. Amazing. Amazing, amazing stuff. To the scorecards. Kind of a moot point because I can't believe some of these cards, man. Carl Moretti posted the scorecards from Top Rank. All 3 judges had Mason up comfortably heading into the 12th round. 106-103. 107-102 twice.
Home cooking.
So it didn't matter
if
the fight was stopped early. Home cooking. Bro, 3-3 after 6, one of the judges. Two of the judges had it 4-2.
Bell didn't get Bell hit for 6 rounds.
Six.
What are we doing?
Before. I have the stats. Bell outlanded Mason 58-46 first 6. He outthrew him by 85 punches. 5-1-4-2.
Yeah. I had a 5-1.
It was that's what I thought for the first 6. Like I saw Lou DeBell
had a
5-1. Well, you're very rarely going to see that. 5-1 is that's where I was looking at. I was like, "Damn. This is one of the more it's just obvious to me. And it's never, boxing is never like that. Like, the more clear-cut, like, Bell was doing just enough. He wasn't outlanding him by 20-plus punches and completely clowning Mason in
there.
That's
how Bell fights, though.
He was just doing just enough, right?
No, he wins by margins. That's what
margins.
Bell does.
He fights on the margins.
He fights on the margins, and he's willing to do that. And with his stature and his physique, everything looks bigger and better when you're a guy controlling the center of the ring. He's a very good ring general. He lands very sharp, clean punches that you can see, almost amateurish, where you want to make sure everyone sees it. and kind of set the tone, and then you're willing to win on that. He's not going to come forward. He's not going to track you down. He's not going to beat your body up and slow you down the way Mason does. It was very amateur versus pro in that in the way that this fight was contested. But listen, for six rounds, amateurs are a nightmare to deal with. You got a guy who's touching you and he's boxing you from length, just exactly the way Bell did. But at the end of the day, this is why 12 championship fights are fought at 12 rounds. Because those last two rounds make a huge difference. Those last six rounds, everything happens in the second half of a fight. So that's where champions are made. And Abdullah Mason is a true champion. And unfortunately, Albert Bell, as good as he is, probably never going to be world champion.
It was awesome. Him, probably not. He's good, not great. He's outstanding, but he's not that next level, not that next tier. He put up a great fight. This was an awesome replacement opponent. This could have been so much worse. This
could have been way better than Cordina.
That's what I mean. Like, this could have been not even that, like, in terms of like the other opponents.
It would have been a showcase for Abdullah, which isn't the worst.
What were the other names they were throwing out that they wanted? Damn it. It wasn't Bell, wasn't the first choice.
Wow.
There was another name out there. I don't know why it slipped me. Just put it in the comments. It was a notable name, but it wasn't a big time like someone of Bell's stature. I love what Bell said after the fight, TNT. We'll get to that in a second, too. I thought their production, their pregame was awesome. They had Mason on the desk afterwards, and he said, you know what? I did spar with Bell a lot, and I did not show him in the ring what I showed him in sparring. I changed it up off timing, different speeds. I knew 12 rounds was going to get to him because I knew that he'd never been there. I have, even though it's just once, it's still one more time than him. That's what I mean with Mason, man. It's like, man, the sport is in good hands. Like, I was a little nervous because I've said this numerous times in the show. Like, we root for the sport. Obviously, I want to see just, you know, things be justified. If Bell deserved to win, of course, it would have been an awesome upset and all that. But there's like also a part of me that's like, we really need Mason to keep winning. We really need Mason to keep fighting. We need him to keep winning. We need him to keep shining. We need him to keep, TNT, Bleacher Report, House of Highlights to keep promoting him. Very, very needed in this sport. And I feel good about him as a potential face of one of the many faces of boxing.
Couldn't agree more. I love everything about the kid, him and his family. I've been around them quite a bit from Top Rank, and they're just all class. Very mature.
3-0 on the night. Yeah. All the Masons.
Two KOs, one decision. But yes, and a title coming home. So yes, I mean, if like you said, the sport's in good hands. If he is the next torchbearer of our sport, no question. But also to your point, last week, honestly, it might have been better for the sport if Xander Zayas had won. But the right guy won, and the sport moves on. And regardless, the sport is good, and we're in a good place. We're in a really good place. It's a really good thing that Boots is that guy, and people are recognizing his ability. It's really good that a guy like Abdullah Mason is overachieving each and every step up. Because this was another overachievement in my book. The Sam Noakes fight was an overachievement because, like, I thought he was going to go out there and just handle that guy. And he gets into an absolute blood and guts war and pulls it out. Wow, the kid's got it. Then this one, absolute chess match. Figures it out. Pulls it out. No, boxing's in good hands with a young man like that. And his ability to fight, speak, look, all of it. Like you said, him going to the desk and being like, I had to show him something different than we were sparring. That shows such maturity. The maturity of that. He just turned 22. He was 21 2 months ago. Just turned 22 in April. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy. His ability to adapt, that's what Crawford was most impressed with.
The king of adaptability, which is Crawford.
Exactly. Giving you props. That's cool. That's big. Right. Plan A wasn't working. Let's move to plan B. Plan B was the body work. Plan B was mixing it up a little more with Mason. From the eighth round on, Mason outlanded Bell 57-16. That's crazy. Nice. Like, Bell completely shut down after that sixth or seventh round. It was definitely a tale of two fights. The body work from Mason was exquisite.
Brutal.
57.
He threw everything hard.
107. Well, that's one. No, I want to get your thoughts on that. Is that good or a bad thing? Because I figure he first couple of rounds he was loading up and he was looking for that spectacular hometown knockout. The one knock, there's a few knocks, but the one knock on Mason was like, okay, first He throws everything kind of the same speed, like a pitcher that just only throws 101. Where's the changeup? Throw
85. Yeah, I was impressed because he did it for 12 rounds. And
he's 22.
He kept ratcheting it up. But yes, the need for changeups are definitely there, especially with a guy like Bell, who is hard to hit, fights at range, wants to slow the pace down, make it a single digits connect kind of round each and every round and win by margins. You got to be able to mix it up a little bit, but he was just dogged about it. He's like, nah, I'm just going to throw hard. So if you hit me twice, I'll hit you once. I'm going to win on the exchange because I'm hitting harder, but also I'm going to break you down body-wise and I'm going to get you later on. And he certainly did. It worked out. But that's the thing about Mason. There's room for improvement because he is 22. It's only his second fight, second world title fight. And he's going to have many defenses, however many weight classes he's in, and we're going to see him improve each time out. We have. So there's room for improvement, but they strike me as the kind of team that's going to go back and look at this and be like, all right, we gotta change things up a little bit, which is good.
Yeah, so like Noakes wasn't the same type of fighter as Bell. Noakes is a little more of a rumbler. So Mason did get hit a lot in that fight. Mason did not get touched all that much in this fight we just gave you. He only got hit 16 times from the 8th round on. So it's a totally different type of fight. I wouldn't necessarily say, oh, wow, Mason learned from that last fight to not stay in the pocket so long. It was different, totally different type of fighter he was in there. That's the one thing with Mason that we thought heading in. It's like, all right, he sticks in the pocket too long, just like with Boots. Boots gets touched by Zayas. Everyone freaks out. But he's a seek and destroyer type of fighter. Same thing with Mason. So, like, I can't tell from that performance whether that will be something that will come up for Mason in the future in terms of staying in the pocket and getting hit when he doesn't have to. Did you see anything in there that would give you pause from Mason? Those first 6 rounds, would you chalk that up to tricky style, hometown jitters, first defense, a little bit of everything?
I'm going to chalk it up to Bell, because we spoke about it last show. Bell's was a really tough ask. The height, the physicality, the boxing ability, but also familiarity. The fact that they've spent time sparring together. I fought sparring partners. It sucks. Because a lot of it in the beginning, it's like you fall into rhythms that you've had in the gym, even though, yeah, it's very, very different. But, like, it doesn't matter. It still happens. And I think that was part of it, too. I think there was a little bit of a rhythm that happened in the beginning that they were familiar with based on their time spent in the gym. Did you notice when the fight first started, Bell touched Abdullah's father, like, on his shoulder, really long yeah. pause, and then... Yeah. And then Mason went to his coach because obviously this is I'm not saying we're not the same team, but there's a lot of familiarity there, and I think that was part of what happened in those first 6 rounds. But then I'm gonna bring it up again. Bell taking this fight 2 weeks prior to when he was supposed to fight. When you're making weight for a world title fight, your first 12 rounder, it makes a difference. It makes a difference. Bell's very, very good, and he showed that. He showed that at least for the first 6. So. I think that there was a couple things, but nothing gives me pause because his ability to adjust is a powerful tool. And I always say that's what separates champions from contenders. And Mason has that already. So I'm very bullish on Abdullah.
So yeah, so am I. I mean, you could probably throw him in there with just about anyone at lightweight and feel good about it. Will Top Rank do that? They are one of the best when it comes to bringing along prospects. He's no longer a prospect. This guy is a world champion. Same thing with Xander. When you have 2 belts, you have a target on your back. So, yeah, it was a little ridiculous to fight Boots, but no, because you got 2 belts. And
the only thing Boots, ridiculous about the Boots fight is that he chose to fight Boots when he didn't have to. The fact that he fought Boots, you know, whatever, you're supposed to fight guys like that. Like, you're supposed to fight the best guys around. But he chose. He didn't have to. He snuck in right there.
Did have 2 belts, though. Yeah. So, like, you know, you want to unify and all that. I get that. That's last week. Now we're on to this week. Will Top Rank move towards a unification with Mason? Will they look at Raymond Murataya? The rest of it is pretty vacant. We'll have a better idea after the Schofield fight if he fights Lucas Body. Have a better idea if his Roach-Zepeda fight. Obviously, Tank Davis is out there. I don't know what the heck he is doing. But do you see Top Rank moving Mason into unifications, or will they maybe even try to get Cordina back on the line, try to get him back to the States, maybe go over to the UK? Where do you see Top Rank moving Mason? How fast do you think they should move?
It's going to depend on the contract that they had with Cordina. Because, they, like you said, they might revisit that depending on the deal that they have with Eddie and Matchroom. Because Cordina, I believe, is a Matchroom fighter. At least he was. So they might have a clause where, you know, it wasn't, you know, it was kind of out of their hands in terms of the visa situation. So maybe that. But do they move forward towards unifications? Yes, maybe not next, which is why Cordina might fill the gap. Getting a former world champion, a guy who's been 12 before, unlike Bell. Very possible. But so I spoke to Robert Garcia this week about Muay Thai. And Muay Thai is not, he doesn't want to fight at 135. He's doing this last fight with Conceição, Hobson Conceição. But if it's a unification, they don't have to do the second day weigh-in. So he's more willing to do a unification that way because they have the second day weigh-in. But regardless, he doesn't really want to fight at 35. But if he had an opportunity to fight like a Shakur, if he had an opportunity to fight even an Abdullah, I think they'd try and hang around, whether it's good for them or not. So that's on the docket there. Tank, I'm not even going to speak about it because I just there's too many question marks and I don't know where he re-enters the fray. Is he going to be at that upper tier level?
He's not even worth
really matter as much. No,
he's not even worth
whatever
even thinking about. How about Mason versus the winner of Roach Zepeda?
Love that. I think that's a logical next step. I think Mason is the favorite in either one. I think Roach is a much tougher fight, but the Zepeda fight is a very fun fight. That's a very very fun fight. That's going to be a shootout. That's a complete shootout. I think the Roach fight, they're going to match wits. It's going to be a physical fight, but it's going to be a smart fight. A lot of IQ. I think Zepeda is going to be an absolute war of attrition. But I favor Mason in both.
Yeah, I would too, just off of the raw ability and the what he showed in this fight too with the clutch gene.
And trajectory.
And getting him out of there. Trajectory and all that. But man, I think Roach would present a lot of problems for Mason. Where he's got a little more pop than Bell.
Experience.
He stays in the pocket at times. He can move as well. We talked about this, but Roach too. Like he probably should move a little more, but it really isn't just his game. Like he will stand and trade with Mason. And Zepeda, obviously, he's going to throw 80, 90 punches around, we think. And he did that against Shakur. He still threw a lot of punches against Shakur. Different fighters, though, Mason and Shakur. Shakur, too. We don't know what weight he is at. If he's at 130, he was commenting all night on this fight and gave Mason all his props. So did Haney. So did Ryan Garcia. It seems like the fighters, all the boxers out there, don't have a problem with him. I don't know if there's no real jealousy. They're just very supportive of Mason, which was kind of nice to see when it's usually claws out on Twitter.
Yeah, it's rare. It's rare. But I think he's a respectful, humble guy, and I think with his family, and he's young, I think there's...
And they must know that he's the truth. They must just think he's the truth.
Well, I think it's pretty obvious.
He is the truth. He is the future. So a lot of big fights at 135 for Mason. I would not be shocked if they revisit the Cordina fight. I know Cordina got in some trouble over on his side of the pond.
Yeah, but it was silly. It was silly.
Something at a gas station?
Nah, I saw a video. It looked like a guy picked a fight with him, and he blasted him. Like, I got no issue with that. This guy looked like he was... I mean, the thing was on video from behind the guy who was coming, and it looked like this guy was looking for a lawsuit. And he just like literally walked into him. They're crossing a street, not anything, and just literally just walks right into him and like gives him like a boom and looked like Cordina's like, yo, what's up? And I don't know what the guy said. And then Cordina blasted him. I got no problem with that.
All right. U.S. whatever had a problem with it. So Mason, they didn't want him in here. They didn't want him in the States, but they'll revisit it. I think they'll revisit Cordina, and then they'll look at the winner of Roach and Zepeda, which is August 1st or 2nd. That's the next TNT DAZN fight night, which they're going to do one a month for the next year. And then we figure out Lucas Body. It has been ordered to fight Floyd Schofield. I believe they have a certain amount of time to make that fight. That will be for the vacant WBA as Tank is champ in recess. WBC up for grabs. Is that it? Mason's got the WBO. It's a lot of shifting parts at welterweight, but I think Mason, just from fighting more at the weight and just simply fighting and being active and looking good, got the leg up on all those guys. Would you agree?
Yeah, and just, I mean, he's 22. just getting physically. He looks like a baby. He's got a baby face. I don't even know if he can grow facial hair yet. Like,
his hairline, it looks CGI.
Yeah, he's developing as a human being at this point, as a human adult. He's still, you know, like that's what's scary about him, like the maturity of where he's going, but also the weight class. Where is he going to end up? He's 22 fighting at 35. Like, I seems like he makes 47. The weight. He looks good at the weight. Like, he looks like a real 35 pounder, which means he probably struggles a little bit, but doesn't seem like he struggles much. He's obviously very disciplined, but 40, 47, like. Yeah, we're gonna. He's a multi-division guy, no question.
Awesome, great stuff. Saved the card last night. Brought some excitement to the crowd because Shushu Carrington wins, but doesn't do it in spectacular fashion. I was very disappointed with that performance from Shushu. 116, 112, 117, 111, 118, 110.
You lost all your bets win. Too.
Well, I'm used to that. I'm disappointed in myself every Sunday. Well, he should have gotten him out of there. Oh, yeah.
I don't think so.
Well, I would have lost it anyway. I would have lost it anyway.
Yeah.
I would have lost both of my bets because I had a Mason decision.
That's why I don't do parlays.
This is what I said on the FanDuel video. These are good individually. There's value here individually. If you want to up the ante, you parlay. That's what parlays are all about. Yeah. I still would have not won. But so anyway, Carrington gets the decision win. Doesn't look great. I am kind of jumping off of the Shushu Carrington train. I was never really on it to begin with. I thought he was kind of a little bit of a creation from Top Rank. Great kid. Great on the mic. Hasn't fought anybody. Gets that title over Castro, who was inactive for a long time. Gets the stoppage win there in his last fight. And I just like, all right, I never really was a true believer in Carrington, but I think he laid an egg last night. I think he could have got a spectacular stoppage. I know Bradley almost fell asleep. They showed him sleeping during the fight. That was a little disrespectful, but Tim Bradley's going to do stuff like that. Yeah, I just wasn't that impressed with Carrington. I think he could have made a big-time statement on Saturday, and he did.
As much as I love the kid, I obviously know him from New York, and he actually came up to me after it was right after the Pacquiao fight. That I had lost in 2014, and I was at the Barclays Center. I forgot who I was there.
Dude, how old was he?
Yeah.
Oh, he's 29.
So
he was like a teenager?
Yeah, but that was like 12, 13 years. That was 11 years ago, 10, 11, 12 years ago. So yeah, he was 17. He was still a teenager. And he runs up to me and grabs like, hey, champ, man. And I was bummed. I was like super bummed. Like I couldn't hide it. It was my first loss. I lost to Pacquiao. I was embarrassed. But like, I forgot why I had to be at the fight, but I had to be there for some reason. And that's when I had one of the most brilliant lines anyone's ever given me in the sport of boxing. It was Paul Amanaji. And he goes, hey, champ, in this sport, you got to have thick skin and a short memory. It's all good. And I was like, shit. That's a really good line, and I've been using that ever since. But I was still upset. I couldn't take it off my face. And then Shushu ran up to me outside the Barclays Center. I was like, "Hey, champ!" And he was like, "I didn't know who he was. I wasn't following the amateurs at that time. He was obviously very well known, but he was just such a good kid. He was excited, and he was like he had that twinkle in his eye, like he was going to be what he is right now. So been a big fan of him, of course. But yeah, no, I wasn't really on the on that train either. That you know, he's going to be the guy at 126 because it's just such a deep division. It's not a knock on him. The division is crazy deep, and there's some really difficult champions to deal with. But I will say this about Randy Palacios: he's a Pro Box TV fighter. He called out Suleiman Sagawa, who's very, very tough, gave Shushu all he could handle in the Garden a couple years ago. And he saw him beat up one of the guys on Pro Boxing and goes, I want to fight that guy. And he went out there and I called the fight. He fought his ass off. He's super tough, super durable. He can punch a little bit, throws a lot of punches. And we saw that. And apparently he's durable. No, I've never seen him get hurt. He's never been down. He's never been stopped. That was his first loss. So you got to kind of, because you don't know what Palacios is. So, you know, maybe that guy's actually really, really good and is world class, but.
He controlled it, though. He controlled the fight. 116, 112. I had 117, 111 was more in line when I saw. He got landed on me. I threw him.
Controlled the beginning of the fight.
Never really. There was the moment towards the end of the fight. There was a body shot by Palacios that really
certainly
stung.
Hurt.
Yeah, he even admitted it afterwards, Carrington. Listen, Carrington's a great kid. He's literally one of the best guys in the sport. I've had great conversations with him. He's just a positive outlook on everything. Like, and I think you said it perfectly. it's just in comparison to the other champions in the weight class, and this is what it's all about. Once you have that belt, you have more pressure, you have more expectations. We can sit here and pick apart and criticize you. It comes with the territory. You're a world champ, and there's other champions in this division. Rafael Espinoza, I think, handles
Bruce
quite easily.
Absolute nightmare.
Figueroa, Angelo Leo, those guys are tough as nails, battle-tested freaks of nature, Espinoza. You got Figueroa, extremely battle-tested, and you have Angelo Leo, who's also been through everything.
And a two-division world champion, by the way. I think people forget that. He was a world champion at 22, and now he's a 20 champion at 26, and he knocked Venato Lopez fucking dead, who can really fight.
That was a good one.
Sick.
Need Leo to get more active. But yes, I just don't see it with Carrington. I just don't. He just doesn't. He's undersized. He doesn't have the pop.
He came in like 125. He came in like a full pound under the weight. That was weird.
That's what it is. That's what it is with Carrington. Doesn't get the win. He gets the hit behind the head. Wouldn't have mattered. Referee called it a slip, which was wrong. But it did hit him behind the head, which is an illegal punch. An illegal punch that causes a knockdown. That shouldn't count as a knockdown. Am I crazy?
No, but there are, there's been worse calls on knockdowns. Yes, it was a punch high on the head. You'd have to really look to see if it was more behind, because essentially it's your ears. You're supposed to bisect by the ears, which is weird because everyone's ears are different. So it's a weird rule. You're supposed to bisect what's illegal is in front of the ears and what's legal, not illegal, is behind the ears. Was that punch behind the ears? Probably.
Looked it.
Yeah. So,
but the referee called it a slip, which was the wrong call, but it was not ruled a knockdown. I don't think an illegal punch that causes a knockdown should be ruled as a knockdown.
Right.
It's illegal.
But a lot of times, like Sergio said it too, he's like, well, it wasn't Palacios' fault. It was Carrington dipping his head to try and go under the shot that got clipped.
Regardless.
But I've seen that knockdown called on a lot of people. That knockdown's been called on me. I've been hit with shots that dinged me off the back of the head that I went down and they called it a knockdown. But it depends on the ref. It's their discretion.
It's Harvey Dock in that one. Mark Nelson in the main event had a tough one. Harvey Dock, one of the better refs.
One of the most consistent. And now we get to, because you know why? Harvey was a fighter. Harvey used to box.
New York guy. I like Harvey Dock. I don't mind him at all. Tough job refereeing. Now we get to probably the most interesting part of the Carrington fight was the podcast that broke out during it. All around open scoring. There was open scoring used in the Carrington Palacios fight. They announced it in the fourth round at the end of the eighth round. Very awkwardly, as the next round is going on, like a minute in, Jimmy Lennon reads it out. I don't even know if
during
the fighters
could
hear it. Dude, it was like dystopian. It was like Jimmy Lennon, like, after four rounds, everybody, Carrington is up 4-0. Yes, my eyes, that's what I saw. After eight rounds, Carrington is also up like 79-73. But he says it about a minute into the following round. So round five, a minute in, is when Lennon makes this announcement. There's no way the fighters can hear that. If they do hear it, right, you're a fighter. You can hear it? And if are you also like at that point then
shit. Yes,
factoring
1,000%. It's why it's one of the reasons why me as a fighter thinks open scoring is so fucking stupid. It's going to change the fight, and not in a good way.
Let's talk about it, because I had a few tweets like, Dan, what does Chris think about open scoring? I personally don't like open scoring because I don't like anything that encourages a fighter coasting if they're winning the fight. Now, there are other aspects to it that are positive or can be looked at as a good thing. That, for me, overrules everything. Why don't you like it?
Because it can affect the flow of the fight. And more negative than positive. Positive could be like, oh no, I'm down. I gotta go out there and go to work. But a guy like Palacios, you're like, I'm down that much. I'm down after four. I thought I won that round. Oh, I thought, all right, I gotta pick it up. All right, I picked it up. Down it now eight. I'm that much behind. What am I doing now? I gotta like go out there and fight recklessly. It's gonna affect the fight. And you don't want outside influences affecting you. It's not the way a fight is supposed to be fought. You're supposed to feel the energy, the aura. You're supposed to trust that the judges, which is a problem, you're supposed to trust that the judges are doing their thing. Fight your fight, and then if you don't get the knockout, you think you did enough. You felt the aura. You feel the end. Like, that's the thing. People who have never fought at a high level will never understand this. No offense, Dan, but like you're in a ring with somebody.
None taken.
You can feel their energy. You can feel their aura. Like, I'm whipping your ass right now. whether it really looks like it, I know your aura is hurt. I know it's like a video game with the hit points. Like, I know I got better. My aura is above yours. I know you know you're getting your ass kicked, even though you're trying not to and playing poker. Part of it's playing poker, man. And when you got those scores coming out mid round, it's a distraction, and it's going to change the way you fight. And the fact that, like, we didn't come up like this. It's not like we've been doing this our whole career. We're going to do this in title fights. Now, the first time you've ever had open scoring is a title fight? Nonsense. Absolute nonsense.
WBC used it in this fight.
Why?
It was not used in the main event because it was WBO. I don't know. WBC
just arbitrarily.
Yes, they do things to say, look, we did it. We have a 250 belt. We have the whenever they were going to use six judges, we have an AI, this. WBC just throws shit out there just to say, hey, we're doing stuff. So they throw this in there. Like, Cleveland Commission never really uses it. It was only Texas for years past. I remember some, like, De La Hoya fights, some Canelo fights in the past had open scoring. To me, it's like, I wanted to ask this to you. Like, if you're losing a fight, you just talked about how you know when you're kicking someone's ass. If you're losing a fight, don't you know you're losing? Like, you need the scores to be read out? Or is it more of a thing where, like, you just never know with the judges?
Well, that's what I meant about the, like, Palacios, where, like, he thought he was way more in that fight than the scores were giving him. So, like, that can either spur you on or really just put you, like, oh, I'm not supposed to win this fight. Like, obviously, like, you know, like, nothing I do is getting recognized at this point. And then, again, it changes the way you fight. Now you get more reckless. Now you get hit with a shot. Now you get knocked out. I don't think it's necessary at all. Do your job. Go out there and fight. Try to get the knockout. If not, dominate the space. We all know what winning is. Just go out there and do that. I know the judges are crazy, but the only good thing about this is it puts a little more highlight on the judges if you have a score that's crazy.
I heard that too. I got a lot of tweets about that. But what?
Yeah, but you know what? How that's going to hurt the judging? Because now the judges have a name attached to it during the fight, and if one judge has a 4-0 and the other guy has a 0-4, I'm going to be less aggressive on my scores now. It's changing.
They didn't say who has what, though.
Okay, but we got one guy who's
they
wide.
They just read the scores out.
So the judges are going to be less aggressive on their scorecards now. They're going to give more like, well, that was a close one. I'm going to go this way.
Oh, yeah. They might say, like, wait, if he has it 4-0 and I have it 3, like 2-2.
Because,
like,
the judges would never know what the other judges are scoring. That's part of the sport.
Well, yeah. It's a multifaceted debate.
It's, like, bad all around. It's bad all around.
I think it's bad, but there are, like, certain things, like, they brought, okay, this is where I got to, like, the podcast part. Like, they went to the desk and they went right to Porter, and Porter liked it. Bradley liked it, and Mora hates it. So then I'm thinking, all right, that's fine. That's just going to be a 20-second little thing, like, why Bradley hates it. Mora, they go back to the booth. Mora says a line. But then it just went on, kept going back and forth. It turned into a whole debate for about 2 minutes of the round. And it wasn't the most exciting fight, so I was like, kind of okay. I'm more about, let's just show the fight and let's not get into arguments for 2 minutes during a round. But then they go back to it, and they're still later in the fight. And then you have Bradley. This is crazy. Bradley is... I don't know what you're talking about, Mora. And Mannix, blah, 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 blah. He's, like, up there on the perch at the host desk, and they're almost getting combative. So it was almost like the host desk versus the broadcast booth. When we're all essentially on the same team. This is all TNT DAZN presentation. But, you know, Bradley. He's going to be controversial. He's going to be disruptive. He's going to be... He wants to get argumentative. He was just calling by the way. And Mora, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know what you're watching. And Mannix, what makes you think your scorecard is the end-all, be-all when it comes to, you know, like, when they put it out there? It was a little much. Once again, horrible fight, and it added for some, like, added
In-studio drama.
In-studio drama. Ultimately, don't like open scoring. There was a few points brought up from Bradley who liked it. And he talked about the fact that every other sport, you know the score. Boxing... You don't know the score.
That's,
you have
no
idea.
That's not true. In objectively scored sports, you know the score. This is a subjective scoring, like in the Olympics with gymnastics. That is a subjective score given at the end of the competition. It's not during. Right. This is not an objective score.
Right. And then that's what I heard from the, you know, people that were against it. It was like, this boxing is, first of all, what you just said, number one. Number two, boxing is unlike any other sport. And this guy on Twitter, his name is Kaposa, one of the best follows in all of combat sports. People listening to the show probably already follow him. He made a good point. It's like, I almost don't want to watch a robbery unfold in real time. I don't want to know that I'm getting robbed as a fan. Like, I when it comes at the end, that's when there's debate. It's almost,
it changes like, the viewing totally experience.
Changes the viewing experience. It's like he said he doesn't even think fans understand how much the suspense adds to it. The fact that you don't know the score. In every other sport, you know every single aspect that's going on. I mean, timeouts you have. I mean, what's the score? You know, halftime's coming up, this, that, and the other. Boxing, this is why it's so debatable. It's like we don't know what's going to happen at the end. It takes a little bit of the – it pulls the air out of the room. You know what I mean? When it's the after the eighth round and either one judge has it completely off – or one of them has it like completely wide, like, and then I'm sorry, the next four rounds are kind of just like a foregone conclusion.
Another point: boxing is a combat sport. We are mimicking war. There's no scorecard in war. We don't know who's winning until the fight's over, till the war ends, the battle ends, and then the dust settles and the winner's still standing. That is what this is. This is a combat sport. We are mimicking war. You don't know who's winning in war until it's over.
Yeah, it's true. You have an idea. You have people putting out wrong information.
I feel like I'm winning. I feel like I'm winning. I'm doing enough. But then at the end of the day, oh, there's a whole other battalion, you know, flanking us.
Oh, shit.
You know?
Fucking A, bro.
Except on a landmine. Oops.
Bam. So Carrington gets the win. Don't think he could stand up to the Espinosas, the Figueroas, the Leos. We just talked about what we think Top Rank will do with Mason. What's Top Rank going to do with Carrington? Because he's 29 years old. He is a ring ambassador. He's out there in interviews. He's everywhere. Mm-hmm. There's three other champs out there. He's good for the sport. One of which, 100%. But my point is, he's out there. He's asking for big fights. He's calling out Inoue. I love how he's going right past the other champs and looking for Inoue. Espinosa is a Top Rank fighter. Carrington,
he's called him out. He's called him out, too. But I don't know how much they...
I don't see... I don't know what Top Rank's going to do. They're going to have to feed him to someone soon because you can't hold that belt forever.
I think they are going to kick the can down the road a little bit and maybe wait for the Inoue fight. It's a very...
I don't like that plan.
It's a very... very
what's
seeable.
To say Inoue's going to choose that?
Because he's a good entry into 126. He's a smaller... He's one of the smallest guys. Because 26... Espinosa's gigantic. You're not going right into Espinosa. As good as Inoue is, I don't see him picking Espinosa as the first guy he goes at 126. Maybe I'm wrong, because these Japanese guys, they move different. But I don't see him going right to that. Espinosa, he's got pound for pound, like, ceiling. Like he's
like Navarrete vibes.
Yeah, he's phenomenal. And with his stature and the way he's able to and the way he fights, yeah, he's knocking on the door. I don't think he goes right to that fight. But even Angel Leo, who's a former 122-pound world champion, he's a really solid 26-pounder. I was at the weigh-in for him and Aleem, and he looked strong.
When I think of Leo, I think of he's huge in my mind for some reason. Like, you know what I mean? He like plays bigger than he is.
He's got a... Yeah, he's not a big guy. He's not tall like an Espinosa, but he's got a lot of muscle on him. And he's developed himself into a real 26-pounder. He's done it the right way. He's done
it slow.
It's
probably because of that big stoppage he had. Stays in my mind. That big knockout stays with me.
Bro, he's gotten way bigger since then. I'm telling you. I'm around the guy physically. He's a real 26-pounder. So
Carrington, they find these types of opponents for Carrington until they hope Inoue. Move first of all, Inoue beats Bam, and then Inoue moves to 126, and Inoue chooses Carrington.
The landscape changes a lot, man. Landscape changes a lot. So,
but if Carrington was to fight one of the other champions, where do you see it going? Espinosa, Figueroa, or Leo?
I would say probably Leo, because Leo's a pro box TV guy, Figueroa. Well, no, because of PBC.
Figueroa's like PBC.
Yeah, I think Leo because
like Espinosa's Top Rank.
I know, but I don't see them doing that. I don't see them making that fight because they're gonna. Espinosa's gonna be a big favorite in that fight, and I think Leo's a worthy risk because he's co-promoted by Top Rank. He's a Pro Box TV guy. He's a Pro Box TV and co-promoter with Top Rank. So if they can get Carrington to knock off Leo, because he's only a co-promotion, they have a full promotion on Carrington. If he's able to beat Leo, boom. All right, now we got a guy. We got a guy who's got two belts, and he's fully promoted by us. If Leo wins the fight, all right, we got a guy we have to promote, but at least he's got the, we got a piece of him who's a two-belt champion. You go to Figueroa, you lose the fight, you completely lose the belt, which promoters don't like doing that.
Yeah, Figueroa's on an island by himself. He hasn't fought since last year when he got that big win. Over Nick Ball. No disrespect to Shushu.
No, not at all. Like you said, we love Shushu on the show.
It's just we got to use our eyes. And I'm sure he wasn't really happy with that performance, even though in the ring after he's saying, 4th of July, come out to my parade. I'm having a parade in Brooklyn next week. They're going to honor me.
He's doing Shushu things. He's really good at that. But I think he learned a lot in this fight. He hugged Palacios right afterwards. Was like, man, good, like, props, but also like, I needed a fight like that. I needed, because he's been. It's the thing about Shushu is it's not who he beats, because he hasn't beat that many guys that are like you'd really really consider a rate, but it's how he beats them. Even Castro. Castro's right. Tough, solid, you know, good contender, but he knocks him out. And he does it in highlight reel fashion. It's like, oof, you know, this fight was not that. This was a fight that very little highlights from the fight. Got the highlights really are for Palacios hitting with a body shot where his leg hit left the ground. But as a champion, you need to get through those kinds of fights. He's been through a tough 12-round fight where he did not dominate. He did not end the fight. He had to go 12. He did get hurt. There was an arguable knockdown in there. He had to deal with some stress, some resistance. I think it's going to be good for him in the long run.
All right, finally, the TNT production I thought was outstanding. They did a little pregame show before the fight. It felt big. It amplified the event. It felt like it was a big-time event. You had our guy Adam Lefko at the host desk, who did a phenomenal job. You had Bud, you had Porter, you had Tim Bradley. It was a big name. I feel like inside the NBA for boxing. I thought it was great. I thought they should definitely keep it going. And from what I've heard, they're going to do it once a month for the next year at least. So that part was pretty damn cool. I thought.
Love that. It's good for boxing. The more boxing that is available for fans to ingest, the better. But they just take it from other sports. MLS does it. The soccer, the FIFA, they do the same thing. They get champions from the past and they put them on a panel and they let them talk. And you know, everybody does it. Basketball does it. Boxing is doing the right thing, doing that, bringing these guys in. I think it's a really smart move. And I think the fact that we get this every month, it's awesome.
Yeah, Bradley was the most comfortable. That's not shocking at all.
He's so TV media trained.
He's made for TV. He sticks by his hot takes. He sticks by them, which I like. He doesn't waffle on them.
Loves the hot takes.
Loves the hot takes. He wasn't afraid to go after the, you know, Sergio and Mannix. It was a little awkward at times, but yeah, it's boxing. It's a contentious sport. All the media all beefs with each other. Fighters beef with each other. It's a sport where there's a lot of arguments and debates. So that part was kind of cool. They kept going to them throughout the night, getting Bud's thoughts, like sixth round of the Mason fight. Even though Bud needs to work on a little more, he even said he was nervous at the Open, which I thought was hilarious. This guy has fought on the biggest stages, beat Canelo Alvarez, Errol Spence, has been performing for 15 years on the biggest of stages, even longer than that. Said, I'm a little nervous, but it's Bud. When Bud speaks, you listen. I think he will get better, but it just shows you how hard TV is.
People think it's easy, man. Even my friends who have watched me come up doing this for such a long time, they're like, ah, but you're like, you know what you're talking about. Like, nah, you gotta study, dude. You gotta watch tape.
You gotta nail it to one take.
Yeah, you have to. That's another thing. There's such limited time. Donald Trump does the weave. You can't do that on TV if you're a broadcaster. You have to be concise and you have to be succinct. And those are the guys that you see make it to the top.
Yeah, I loved it. I thought the pregame show added a lot to it. When it came down to the broadcast, it was pretty much the same type of broadcast we've seen with the Zone. There were like commercial breaks because they had to throw it to commercial on TNT. The next one is Zepeda and Roach in August, which will have the same type of format and the same type of presentation with the guys at the desk. I don't know if they'll actually be there in the crowd or they'll be at the Atlanta studio. Kind of like what Inside the NBA did for years, is they had this. They go halftime or before the fight, they would go to the studio. I don't think it makes a difference.
Doesn't make a difference.
But being there probably is cooler in terms of like getting the feel.
I don't know. I think it looks better, more produced if it's in studio. You don't have to necessarily be there. You're at, you know, some dais above, and like ESPN used to do that. Yeah, I don't know. I guess both work. More energy, obviously, if you're in the room. So yeah, there's gives and take on that one.
Yeah. All in all, great night of fights. Abdul Mason secures the win, gets the big time pop at home. It was great. It was a good night. He saved the show, and we move on to the next one. On Thursday, we will have our mid-year award show. We do it every year. We're midway through the year.
Oh, wow. We're midway already?
Yikes. I know. We have to go back and look. Fighter of the Year, mid-fighter of the year, and all that. So we'll have a new show for you on Thursday. Following weekend, we're going to take off. Going to actually go on a vacation a little bit. We'll go to Montauk.
Not me. I'll be working.
Always work. Always work. All right, everyone. Keep your hands up at all times. Protect yourselves at all times. Stay out of those DMs. See you next time.